Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Ladies, hello, gentlemen. This is the Victor Davis Hanson Show. I'm Jack Fowler, the host. You're here to listen to the star and the namesake, the man of wisdom, Victor Davis Hanson, who is the Martin and Ely Anderson Senior Fellow at the Hoover Institution and the Wayne and Marsha Buskey Distinguished Fellow in History at Hillsdale College. Victor's official presence on the World Wide Webs is the Blade of Perseus. The web address is victorhanson.com. You should be going there early and often, like voting in Chicago. And I'll tell you why you should be subscribing to it later in the podcast. Victor, we are recording, as you know, the Sunday, the 21st of April, in the aftermath of the House vote on funding for Ukraine and no funding for the border, it seems, or maybe it's spec. I'm not sure the precise details, but we'll get your thoughts on that, Victor, on the madness, the Jew hate at Columbia University, the performance of that college's president before Congress this past week, and other topics of interest to our listeners. We'll get to all that, Victor, and you, dear listeners, right after these important messages.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
We are back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Victor, I'd like to maybe lead into the getting your views on what happened in the House this past week with an ex post by Senator Mike Lee of Utah, and it's titled Evolution of House GOP Logic on the Aid Package. And it's 5 points. One, give us something to force Biden to secure border. Two, give us a slightly more secure border. Three, give us something that won't weaken the border. Four, make the media like us. Five, give the Democrats what they want. Victor, we have that about the border aspect of this funding, and of course, massive aid to Ukraine. Victor, are your thoughts about legislation, sins of omission, sins of commission?
What the Democrats did was they basically said, because remember that now, Jack, only about 40% of Democrats poll in favor of Israel now. So the Democratic Party does not want to give stuff to Israel. Biden may, with his two-step, trash them publicly, plash them behind their backs, and then give them aid because he's afraid of America, because American popular opinion is 65% in favor. But my point is this, that The Republicans want to give aid to Israel. The Democrats want to bundle that all up. The Republicans, I think most of them, not would, if they supported, gave money to finish the wall, to stop catch and release, to stop the crazy refugee status, and to deport people here legally, they would give enough money for Ukraine to defend itself. And what would that be? That would be things like artillery shells and javelins, but probably not sophisticated aircraft that would conduct missions in Russia, et cetera. Okay, we don't have to get into that. But my point is this. The Democrats know that. So they want to they want to play on their rules, that everything has to be conditioned on aid to Ukraine, and then we'll give it to Israel, and then we'll do this, and then we'll do that, and then we'll do that. And there's enough people in the Republican Party that, A, want to help Ukraine, so they want the aid to go to it, and there's enough that want something to be given to Israel. But if you say that the Democrats have to close the border, there's two problems with that in order to get the Ukraine aid. They're going to vote against you lockstep, and you've got people in the Republican Party, Jack, that care more about giving aid to Ukraine than closing the border. And you're not going to win. So Johnson is, he's not stupid. He's told that. And so he's trying to get aid to Israel, aid to Taiwan, and some, a little bit more for the border. But until the Congress reflects where the American people are in the border, like 65% want to close, it's nothing's going to happen because there's too many vested. The entire Democratic Party wants an open border. They want 10 million people in here for constituents, for census, and for larger government and entitlements. And there's 10 to 15% of the Republicans that want them in here for cheap labor. It's sort of like when George W. Bush said, we can't rebuild New Orleans after Katrina without illegal labor. That's how they think. And that's what Biden said. He basically said the same thing. So what I'm worried about is this. They only have one or two person margin of error in the House. So if Marjorie, she has some good points. We should be closing the border first and Ukraine second. They don't have any sense of urgency about the border like they do about Ukraine, but they're going to lose the speakership. If they lose the speakership and they lose their majority, the speaker's going to close down. The Democratic speaker will close down everything. There will be no investigation of anybody. The Bidens will have a blank check to do their home scot-free, and then they'll start going after Trump like they did when they had the majority before. It's essential that they keep the majority in the House. And you can get angry about all. I'm angry at Kevin McCarthy for resigning. That Buck guy resigned. Even Gallagher, he stayed on a little bit. But none of those guys should have resigned.
Actually, Victor, when Gallagher did it, and we talked about this a little, it almost seems spiteful that he did it in such a way to preclude a special election, which it's a Republican district.
I know, and Buck did the same thing. He was mad. And so did Kevin.
So did Kevin, right.
Kevin was angry. He was angry. I mean, I feel like saying, hey, you guys, are you angry at the people who are listening to this?
Right.
Because this election is the last chance. I see it as the last chance. So you're going to get your petulance, and then you're going to punish the American people. Because you got to stop this Jacobin project. And if you give up the House and they have the Senate and they have the presidency, it's going to be scary enough if Biden loses the election, what he'll do in, you know, November, December, January, February, 4 months. But you give him the House and it's really scary. And that's where we're teetering on the brink. So I don't get it. And I think Trump does get it from what I understand. They're angry at him because he was giving signals just to lay off this and don't get in a fight. Whatever it takes, that's my attitude. Whatever it takes, do not remove the speaker. Do not do it.
Right.
Because if you remove Johnson, there's going to be 20 other people who will not vote for anybody who removed him. And then you're going to have to start dealing in stealthy dealing with Democrats to get the majority. Yeah. And it's almost suicidal. It just drives me nuts. Yeah. I mean, everybody's working so hard to stop this radical Jacobin agenda. That's what it is, neo-Bolshevik, neo-socialist agenda. Right. And here the people that we elect can't even finish out their blank term, and they can't even get united. Whatever you say about the Democrats, man, they don't have any. Even they approved aid. They didn't have a large number of Democrats not approve aid to Israel. Most of them didn't want to, but they slapped them down. And they have a discipline that we don't have. I wouldn't want to be them. I'm not admiring them, their purpose or their aims. I'm saying their means are much more regimented than ours.
Yeah.
I'm getting so sick of somebody that goes outside the Capitol, grabs a microphone, gets a bunch of people around and says, Rhino, we're not going to do this. We're going to get rid of the speaker. We're going to get rid of the speaker. We went through that psychodrama. Jim Jordan was going to do it. We had all those guys that came up. It was embarrassing. And people, it's not a good optics at all. It just shows you can't govern. They need to tell Johnson, and he needs to say to everybody, whatever disagreements you have, we keep here. And he will try to make it up. And another thing he's thinking, that he doesn't see it as either or, border or helping Ukraine. But if Ukraine is old, I almost think that if Ukraine is overrun, they will say that the Republicans lost, like China, they lost Ukraine. That'll be a campaign issue. And, you know,
if that did happen, Victor, do you think it would be harmful to the Republicans?
Well, if the Ukrainian government collapses and Putin run goes through, there will be reprisals. There'll be death squad. They will kill a lot of people, and you'll have a mass flight all through Europe. And this war, people, and I don't want Ukraine to try to win back. I mean, I'd like to see it happen, but it's not going to happen. They're not going to take back Crimea and the Donbass. And some people have responsibility, and I'm not going to mention names, but I heard both in person from people and read in the news and watched on TV that March 2023, April, May, it was on to Moscow. There were Challengers, there was Leopards, there was Abrams, there were all of these new weapons. They had been trained by the U.S. Army. They were going to blast through, and it was going to be that didn't happen. It was the stupidest idea in the world. When you're that outnumbered, they should have made a barrier and let the Russians butt their head against it. And then they would have, but they lost 10 to 20,000 people. At some point, people are going to have to say to themselves, we're destroying the nation of Ukraine. And what they need to do, if we're going to arm them, they're going to have to go on a purely defensive mode. And they're going to have to give up the idea that they have the wherewithal to take back Crimea and take back Donbass. They don't. They don't have it. Maybe if the Putin government falls and there's an elected government 20 years from now, they can negotiate that. But their primary mission is to get Putin back where he was in February of 2022. And if they can do that, slowly they will survive.
Right. But
I have all these colleagues where I work and I hear all these people, you know, these are the same people, Jack, that told us that in 2 months, Russians would be on the other side of the border. And, you know, they don't, and they always say things like, well, the Russian army is incompetent. Look at the Finns. Look at the Finns in 1930. The Finns lost that war. Yes, it was incompetent, but that's the point. When Russia has expeditionary forces, they look awful and they fight in a mediocre fashion, and then something happens. They take enormous losses. The battle is recontextualized as a fight for Mother Russia or whatever. And they do beat the Finns, and they do go in to Poland in 1939 and take it. And they do stop Napoleon, and they do stop Army Group Center and South. Yes, and they can't take, yes, a million people die at Leningrad, but they don't take Leningrad.
It just seems there's something in a Russian psyche that makes them fight that way, right? Well, Victor, I have a kind of a follow-up here from a reader based on some of the things we've just talked about. But first, I just want to take a moment for our sponsor, Field of Greens. And Field of Greens is the healthiest thing you can do every day. Field of Greens is radically different. Each organic fruit and vegetable has been medically chosen to support health, heart, and vital organ health. I trust Field of Greens to keep me healthy, and I promise you're going to love this product. But if for any reason you don't, they'll give you a 100% money-back guarantee. I've got you 15% off your first order, plus free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com. Use the promo code VICTOR, V-I-C-T-O-R. That's the promo code VICTOR at fieldofgreens.com, fieldofgreens.com. And we thank Field of Greens for sponsoring the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Victor, we've been asking our listeners to send in questions, and many have. I want to thank folks for doing that. Again, Victor is going to be away for a part of May and then part of July, and we're not going to not have shows. So we will use these questions for that purpose. We still want to send Jack, rslc at gmail.com. You can send me your questions. But here's one that came in, and I think it's appropriate to use now. It's from Rick from the Bronx. And he wrote, he says, in recent days, I feel like I'm living through a bad dream, but above all the craziness rises one inexplicable fact that I would love to hear VDH's thinking on. I understand that the propagandist principle that the bigger the lie, the more likely you are to get away with it. However, as documented by Congressman Comer, how can the nation ignore the fact that China, Russia, and other adversaries have paid millions of dollars to the president's family? What were the payments for? Were they gifts? If so, why did the president permit his family to accept them? Were they payments for business services? If so, what was the work product? What did the payers get in return? We know if it were Trump, he'd have been impeached and convicted in days. But with the current guy, crickets. How can this be? You know, Victor, this is a sense of I think, a lot of our listeners of, how come justice doesn't happen? How come the antics of the House of, you know, the Republicans in the House, they can't get their act together? This is kind of a despair out there, I think it is.
I have to be very careful because I don't want to feed that despair. But I get very depressed. It's almost as if everything that is happening to Trump is a projection of their own culpability. So Trump makes a phone call and says, we should delay aid until we can find out that the Biden family did not have a prosecutor involved, fired, so that it can continue on their quid pro quo shakedown. That was all true. And then there was a law that says, if you're going to have a whistleblower, we have to define what a whistleblower, he has to have first-hand knowledge. Michael Venman was the real whistleblower. He made a phone call to Eric Saramella. He was not, had no knowledge of anything. He wasn't on the call. He doesn't, that wasn't a whistleblower. And so what I'm getting at is that Joe Biden was given aid to Ukraine, and he looked at the Russians, and they were massing on the border, and he thought, I'll just suspend it for a while, $100 million, and let's just see if Putin. I don't know why he would do that. They all say that Trump is a Putin puppet, but why did Biden delay aid? Why did Biden tell Putin if my reaction will be, and tell Putin by broadcasting it, by saying my reaction will hinge on whether it's a minor invasion. Why did he say about the serial cyber warfare conducted against the United States, pipelines, hospitals. Well, he's got to take some stuff off the list. Can't do all those targets. So my point is this, is that he was much more egregiously using aid and suspended congressional aid because he didn't want to confront Putin, I guess, in a midterm year. Was he impeached? No. And then when you look at the right now, Donald Trump was impeached without a special prosecutor the second time and tried as a private citizen for so-called encouraging people to go into the Capitol. Jack, they just went into the Senate and disrupted the cafeteria. Tlaib gave a talk in the occupied rotunda of that. Chuck Schumer went to the doors of the Supreme Court and called out two justices by name and said, "You don't know what's going to hit you. You sowed you're going to reap the whirlwind." I mean, that was about as weird as you could get. Nothing. And so, yeah, I feel really, I think the reader's absolutely right. And, you know, if you look at what's going on, it's almost like Orwellian. E. Jean Carroll had no case. But even if she had a case, it was past the statute of limitations. That's the law. So then some left-wing activist legislature changes the law. For 1 year, you can file a writ against Trump, even if it happened over 5 years ago. And it did. And then the same thing with Alvin Bragg. The judge says, well, it's all of this non-disclosure form of 216, it's beyond the statute of limitation. However, there was a COVID, so we'll give you COVID credit, and now you can do it. They would never do that for anybody else. So, yeah, I feel like there's no jurisprudence as we once knew it. And this is all coming from, from the people who say democracy dies in darkness. We had Benny Thompson, is that his name? The African-American chair of the January 6th committee. He's got a bill, Jack, to strip Secret Service protection away from anybody who's convicted of a crime. So,
what?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
So that is the Trump bill. And when you collate that with they won't give protection to Robert Kennedy.
Right.
These people mean business. Because yeah. Donald Trump is going to be in New York at certain advertised times and in Washington. They're going to know where he is,
right,
with whom he's with, how long he's going to be there. And if they convict him of a felony and that bill were to go through, then it's just open season. And then you collate that with all of the Kathy Griffith type beheading, Snoop Dogg shoot him, burn him up, blow him up, the Madonna blow, all of those threats they've had. And yet, it's so weird. And you talk about insurrection. He said, he's an insurrectionary because he addressed a crowd. I mean, my God, Hillary said that he was an illegitimate president. So did Jimmy Carter. So did Hakeem Jeffries. He said he's not the legitimate president of the United States.
Did you see Hillary?
Yeah.
Hillary's rant the other day, her projecting.
That Trump wants to kill somebody.
Yeah.
It's crazy. This is going on with this crazy Civil War movie that's out. We know what the subtext of that movie is about. And so these people are very, very dangerous. They're insane. It's like we have a cycles of hysteria.
Yeah.
We had the Me Too mania that the Susan Blasey Ford, who was completely delusional, became a folk hero, but not really a folk hero. She was a useful tool to go after the Supreme Court and general and Kavanaugh nomination to make sure they could set the precedent. You can't appoint a conservative. And then we had the COVID lockdown. Nobody today, even Francis Collins, nobody says it was necessary. We know from the evidence of Sweden, we know that we should have taken the resources and targeted those who were vulnerable, not shut down the schools.
Right.
And that led shutting down the schools, paranoia, sitting in your apartment, getting your news from the television or the internet, no social interaction, no medical appointments, spousal, suicide, abuse, all of that. Then you have the George Floyd, the third hysteria, where people went absolutely crazy for 120 days. And then you have the transgendered craze that's just nutty. You know, 0.01% suffer from gender dysphoria. Now we're told 30% of young people are transgendered in theory on these elite campuses, and we're going to inject them with all these dangerous drugs that could kill them or mar them. It's just crazy. And yet no one says a word. So I agree with the reader. We're in insane times. It only highlights why what little resources we have to shepherd them.
Yeah.
We really have to. You can't give away the house. I don't mind losing the house. I mind it, but that's one thing. But to give it away to those people,
right?
Very depressed. We've got to win these elections. And this is not a good take with Donald Trump being forced to sit there in that court and be humiliated with this ridiculous Alvin Bragg, who campaigned on the idea. Well, I have filed 100 suits against Trump. Elect me and I'll go after him. Oh, federal prosecutors don't want to do a campaign finance. Maybe I can say that the state can use a federal law and bootstrap it. Okay. And statute of limitations said I can't go after that non-disclosure. Well, we'll get an exemption from our friendly judge. Non-disclosure, it's a campaign. That's what it is. It's a campaign violation. It's not like Barack Obama paid $300,000 in campaign violations, Hillary over $100,000. And those were supposedly civil fines. They could have easily criminalized those. I don't know how you stop it. I really don't. But that reader is exasperated, and so am I. The Biden family is completely crooked. And then when you have these commercials that Biden is sharp as a knife and you watch him and doesn't have any idea where he is, these people are delusional.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Well, you talked about riots and some other things, Victor, that prompts an idea, but I want to pose a question to you, but we'll do that right after these important messages.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
With the Victor Davis Hanson Show. I mentioned at the outset, Victor has a website, The Blade of Perseus, victorhanson.com. Subscribe. It's $5 for a month, $50 discounted for the year. And when you do that, or why would you do that? And that's in order to read the exclusive articles Victor writes for The Blade of Perseus. He's got I think it's an 8-part series now, from rural to surreal. Once small farming became latifundia.
Yes, very good. Yeah. Latifundia. All latifundia means is large estates.
Yeah.
Agriculture, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's, do subscribe, folks. Go to victorhanson.com. This wasn't the question I wanted to pose, Victor, but I read the end of the eighth installment, which I have a feeling is the end of it. And you're writing about how the remaining small family farms in the area are, they live as if they're in North Africa circa AD 450. Is there, Fenced, not fenced in, walled in, security. It's almost, it almost gives the impression of small forts. Anyway, it's a great series.
I just as a footnote to that, I have about 11 or 12 people who I graduated from Selma High School. They're 70 now. And so I met them at a friend's house. I hadn't seen some of them in years.
Oh.
And we all were talking, and we were just talking about this area where I am speaking from.
Right.
And it wasn't nostalgia. It was just it was just so different, Jack. None of it, we were all talking about nobody locked their home. And everybody was afraid of, you didn't want to get arrested because you would go to juvenile hall. And there was nothing like fentanyl or oxycodone, none of that. That came later. And if anybody hit a teacher, you would be out for good. Nobody, yeah. Everybody respected the teacher. This was in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
And we were all talking about growing up, and then we were talking about race, that the whole group that we were with, they were Asian, and nobody looked at if somebody was Mexican-American or Asian or white. No, nobody cared. There was none of this tribalism. And it was just a golden moment, and everybody was lamenting the fact that we were very naive, and we were all talking about, you know, being without very... There was nobody that had any money. And, you know, it was when I grew up in a 900 square foot home with five of us. And then my father decided to expand it, but he didn't have the money to connect it. So he built another 700 foot house right next door with three bedrooms and a bath. And we went back and forth in the rain between them my whole life. And it was weird.
Yeah. Well.
And, you know, then I moved into my grandmother's house. It was like Miss Havisham's home. It was just in decay. It was decay. But my point was, we were all like that talking.
Yeah.
Everybody was. And it's just shocking what's happened. And I don't know. I mean, gosh.
Well.
It's very frustrating. So I really admire that letter that, and I admire all, I can't read all these letters, but you know, they all are starting to have the same theme.
Yeah.
You wake up in a coffin. We're not cockroaches or something, but we feel like we're in a different world. It just,
yeah.
I don't have any reference. I can't figure out what's
going on. Here's what happens if we wake up on whatever it is, November 6th, 7th, I forget what day is, election day. Well, this is one of the things you had mentioned riots and other things, but the thing we didn't experience were riots in November of 2020. Remember, Trump had won the week or two before in New York City. Some of the store owners thought he might win. They started boarding up. They were preparing for the onslaught. But if Trump
never going to, it was never going to happen. Trump would, the people who, they don't riot. Nobody knew that.
Well, the people that rioted under George Floyd would have rioted.
Exactly.
If Trump had won.
When Trump lost, his supporters went to the Capitol on January 6th. Some of them were buffoonish, but I don't want to get into that. But there was only one person died violently, probably. Maybe another woman was crushed or something. But the person was shot for the misdemeanor of going through a broken window, which.
Yeah.
We now know when people go into the Senate and they're pro-Hamas, they don't do anything to. And it would be as if one of these pro-Hamas demonstrators who took over the Senate cafeteria, or they took over the rotunda and somebody said stop and somebody shot them. What would happen then? And I think there would have been a riot. And so everybody knows it's asymmetrical. Everybody right. knows it's asymmetrical. I look at those... pro-Hamas, we're going to talk about that in a bit, but they are escalating. So the old distinction, well, I'm just against Israel, but not Jews, or I'm for Palestine, but not Hamas. That's over with. That was months ago. Now we're on to pro-Hamas. We want Hamas, death to America. We're going to celebrate when Iran attacks Israel. We want Iran to win. We want Muslims to win. That's where we are right now. And Jews, they don't, when they go after Jewish people, they don't ask whether you're for Israel or not.
Yeah.
They don't like Jews. And it's happening over the Western world, and it's going to accelerate unless somebody stops it. And you can stop it. You can stop it very easily. All you have to do is suspend and suspend a few hundred students.
Right.
Especially those on student visas.
Yeah, throw then, their asses out. Yeah.
Yeah, and then say, you know what? Death to America. You broke a statute. We said you could not occupy this hallway. You broke the statute. You're now suspended. We're notifying the government. You're going to go back and get all of your promises kept.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be in the death to America country.
Right. Isn't that insurrection? Isn't calling death to America, isn't that insurrection?
I don't know. You can go back to scenic Syria or, I don't know, scenic Iran, or you go back to scenic Jordan, but maybe it was scenic West Bank, and you'll be happy. And we don't. Yeah. I think I told you that I gave one lecture where I actually, in my entire life, I got so angry at the questioners, I spoke back to them. I was at a university in California, and I was talking about the Iraq War, not pro-Iraq or anti, just trying to explain how it happened, where it would go. And during the Q&A, a student from Palestine grabbed the microphone and started screaming and said, "You don't know what's happening to us. I have to fly from Amman, Jordan. I can't go across anymore into Tel Aviv. And that's because of people like you." And I said, "Wait a minute. I thought you didn't like Israel. Oh, Israel is a Zionist fact." I said, "Why would you want to go into Tel Aviv? Or for that matter, why would you want to come here?" And then I said something, I got kind of in trouble. I said, "Let's just make a deal, you and me. I promise I will never, ever go to the West Bank, ever, if you promise to leave." Just, and we'll make it fair and square. How's that?
Yeah.
You don't like America. You don't like Israel. I have nothing against Palestine. So I'm not as radically angry at America, at the West Bank, as you are America, but let's just call it even. And she started, you know, what was her attitude? She started crying. And then one of the administrators came over and talked to me. That was very unkind of you and rude. And it's this, and I'm going to write about not that, but have you noticed something, Jack, about this hot house demonstration? Sammy and I talked about it when Miss Patel goes up and says, "I'm going to murder everybody at your home. We're going to guillotine you." And then she's faced 18 felony counts. Oh, this is not fair. The Vanderbilt, you know, students. "Oh, we can't be arrested. It's unfair. You got Panera Bread, you cops. We didn't get any takeout. They didn't give us takeout. And somebody has to change your tampon. You can't arrest us." It's so weird. And now Ilhan Omar's daughter, they say, "Do not protest with tents." Oh, it's not. And now she's a hero. You could just say, "You know what? You're going to be suspended and you're not coming back." And you know what? And then the New York Post even ran. Did you see that, Jack, where they ran little biographies of some of the protesters at Columbia? They're very wealthy.
Yeah.
Gosh, I could not believe it. They're really, really upper middle class. These are hothouse plants. Right. And they go to the university and they go through a performance art, virtue signaling, radical, hate America, hate the Jews, hate Israel. And as a cursus of norm to go get on Wall Street or Google, the Google people that were suspended or fired, they got angry. And then there's never in their entire life have they hung around with working people, the muscular classes, poor people.
Right.
They don't do it. And as soon as reality hits them, they just fold.
Yeah.
They wilt.
I wish a fist would hit them.
Yeah, well, it's like they're in a fetal position. I can't believe this is happening to me. How dare you do it? Yeah. If these college presidents, I think they have to understand that it's not their tenure that's in question. It's their university. If they continue to allow these protests, they are destroying the entire idea of an elite university. They're destroying, they're tarnishing their brand. They are sending signals that the universities are the incubators of hating America. They're sending message that they are sanctuaries for anti-Semitism. And they've got to stop it. And the only way they can do it is for one brave president to say, it's not going to happen, not on my watch.
Right. This is nostalgia for campus protests. And we look back in the 60s, Victor, I'm not supporting them, but you say, okay, get out of Vietnam and somehow fringe with tinged with free speech. And there are other layers of stuff in there, but you just take those. I think those are the two main driving things in the 60s of the campus protests. But now it's to hate Jews. I mean, there's nothing nostalgic about this and everything.
It's been very informative because when we read about the 1930s, it seems academic and people say, I can't believe that in 1933, there were still Jewish professors. And then by 1934, they couldn't teach or they were roughing it. It accelerates geometrically. And we have gone just in 7 months from, oh, I'm not making fun of Jews. I'm not after Jews. I'm just after Israel. No, they don't distinguish anymore. And, you know, if you're Jewish, you should not be at Columbia University. After the testimony of the president, you can see it, that she understood that she had a role and the radical pro-Hamas people broke it, and they harassed Jews, both rhetorically and in person, and she can't stop them. And then she had to call in NYPD, and then you saw the attitude of these elite, spoiled, pampered kids toward working-class police people.
Right.
From Staten Island and Long Island. They have contempt for them. It's a class thing, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It really is. That's the one redeeming fashion. That's the one redeeming milieu that I enjoy right now, and that is that the Republican Party has finally got wise, and it is the party of the middle class. It really is. And that has the potential to unite people by support for the middle class lifestyle, and that should trump or supersede racial differences. So when I saw those black protesters, they weren't even protesting. They were very polite. They were in Chicago City Council meeting with a mayor.
Right.
And they had that sort of rotund white kid got up and he said, well, we need millions for these illegals. This is what America's based on, immigration. We're going to need more and more money out of the city budget. After all these poor black people had got through there and said, our health services are challenged now. We don't have recreation centers. There are people that are using facilities that are overcrowded and they're not citizen. And here this little pampered white guy was saying, oh, basically, we're going to keep doing it. We need more money. And I wanted to say, well, where do you live? And how is it impacting you? But to see that constituency of inner city blacks were trying to accentuate and emphasize stuff that the Republican MAGA people have been talking about for years.
Right.
And they're on that issue, they're on the same page. And I hope that they look at their leadership like Mayor Johnson. And they say to themselves, Mayor Johnson, Fannie Willis on her junkets, Oprah, the Obamas with their format. These people have as much in common with me and what I'm going through and what I need and what I expect from the United States as the Biden clan and the Hillary clan and the Silicon Valley clan do with East Palestine.
Yeah.
Ohio.
Well, Victor, let's get a little more into Columbia University. If we have a minute, also get back on Zelensky for a second. We'll do that after these final messages.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We're back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show. We are recording on Sunday, the 21st of April. Hey, Victor, I saw on Zelensky, I should have brought it up earlier, but I saw a Twitter, an X post by a guy, David Sachs.
Yes.
He writes, he quotes something. It says, last year, CIA Director William Burns secretly flew to Kiev to warn Zelensky face-to-face that Washington was aware of his personal corruption and his unwillingness to dismiss any of the dozens of officials who were named by Burns, known to be deeply involved in diverting defense funds to personal accounts. Burns also told the president, as I reported, that there was anger among some of his subordinates because he was taking too large a cut of the spoils.
I read that.
Yeah.
And I mean, I guess by bringing it up, Jack, you're a Putin asset or a Putin puppet, because to challenge right. any of that, we're not seeing that in Israel, but we do see it in Ukraine. It's part of that asymmetry I was talking about last week. We tell Mr. Netanyahu, you have to have two members of the opposition and your tripart wartime cabinet. But Mr. Zelensky, you can outlaw political parties, you can outlaw habeas corpus, and you can outlaw elections. I mean, somehow the Churchill had an election in 1945, well before the war was over, and was thrown out of office, but Zelensky can't. I guess that World War II doesn't rate.
Yeah.
And no, we keep saying there's corruption, corruption, corruption. And you can't even be rational. I mean, nobody wants to discuss this. The average age of the Ukrainian soldier is 42 years old. 42, Jack.
That's hard to believe.
Where are the 18, 19, 20, 21, 22-year-olds? They're just now expanding the draft, I think, down to 25. And so they have their problem is manpower. If they really face an existential, and I think they do, threat in Putin, why aren't they? There was at one time 45 million Ukrainians. It's probably down somewhere about 33. But why don't they have an arm? Israel is 11 million people. They can mobilize almost a million people. So why can't they have a 3 million person army? You know, a nation in arms. And then with complete transparency and a free, why don't they have a free media so that people in Ukraine are reading about this corruption? And I don't understand why the Democratic Party cannot say this is such an existential issue that we will build the wall. We will stop Keshe. We will stop the 10. If that's what you guys on the right want, okay. Just give us the aid to let them, and they won't do it.
Victor, the military minds that you deal with regularly, is there, and of those who are supportive of the war, supportive of us supporting Ukraine, is Zelensky's corruption acknowledged? Not only corruption monetarily, but also all the suppression of rights. No, it's not. No. Doesn't come up.
No, I have said in an open forum. I won't say where. I have said in an open forum while I support giving the ability to Ukrainians to defend themselves, something is weird because we insist as a condition of foreign aid that Mr. Netanyahu share power. Why doesn't Zelensky bring in an opposition general? We say to Mr. Netanyahu, we want to know that you are not hitting civilians as collateral damage. We want to know, Mr. Zelensky, are you targeting Russian targets or the way that Russia is? We say to Mr. Netanyahu, you better be proportionate. Are we saying to Mr. Zelensky, how many Russians you killed? I think you've killed a lot more Russians than they've killed you. That's disproportionate. Slow down a little bit. We say to Mr. Netanyahu, this is getting out of hand now. This is getting out of hand. There may have been 10,000 dead Hamas. There's not 30,000 total civilians. It's probably about 10,000 civilians. But you've got to have a ceasefire or else. We say to Mr. Zelensky, there's been 800,000 dead, wounded, missing Russians and Ukrainians. We want a ceasefire. No. You ask Putin for, no, we wouldn't dare to do that. We say, no ceasefire, shoot, don't worry about collateral damage, be as disproportionate as you want, cancel elections, fine with us, no habeas corpus, no coalition government, that's it. And I look at the two countries and I say, wait a minute, Ukraine's not really a democracy anymore, Israel is. Israel was attacked, Ukraine was attacked, why don't we have a symmetrical policy? I don't understand it. Is it because the Israelis are Jews and we have anti-Semitism? Is it because we don't have 250,000 Russians in American universities? Is it because there's not a big Russian voting bloc in Michigan or Wisconsin? I don't know, but it doesn't make sense. He's sacrosanct. You cannot question right. Mr. Zelensky. To do so, I get hate letters all the time.
Yeah,
about you're selling out the Ukraine. Just to say, let's defend Ukraine, but let's not go in and sink the Black Sea fleet on the high seas. Let's not send drones. And then I say, well, wait a minute, that's Joe Biden's position, because Joe Biden has told the Ukrainians, if you're going to attack Russians, please don't attack refineries, because I got to get elected and you're going to put a tight oil market into hysteria if you take Russian oil off. And all the stuff we've been told is it's kind of like I was Vietnam. It's all lies. It's just lies. Whether you like it or not, Russia is still functioning. We were told that their economy was in shambles. India and China are gobbling up Russian oil like crazy. They are importing drones from Iran. They must have the wherewithal to pay for it. They are mobilizing their entire population to go out there. So this idea that Ukraine is going to break them and the war is going to be over very soon because we're giving them $1 billion, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Not unless they can draft the entire nation and get a huge army and then get on the strategic defensive.
Yeah.
But to take an army where the average age is in their early 40s and 4 months send them in an offensive against entrenched fortifications and walls and minefields of a superior, numerically superior enemy is a prescription for suicide.
Well, Victor, we'll round out the show back on the Upper West Side, back at Columbia University, although we should look at Congress, the president. I don't know if I'm saying her. I don't know if I can even say my own name right anymore. But Manoush Shafiq, she's the president of Colombia. Last year was made president. Hard to believe that Dwight Eisenhower was president of Colombia. Now this lady is. But she testified before Congress. She had punked out of that first famous college president's hearing. She was
on a conference, wasn't she, overseas or climate? I don't know what it was.
Yeah. Well, what did you think of her performance. And I know today Stefanik, the Congresswoman Stefanik, has come out calling for her resignation. But anyway, your thoughts on her performance, Victor?
Well, she was supposed to be different than other college presidents. You know, she's supposedly a moderate. She was born in Egypt. I don't know whether she's Coptic or Muslim. It doesn't matter to me, but she was an economist. Usually economists are a little bit more sensible than people in my field in the humanities or law. But she's up there testifying, and they're asking her why she doesn't enforce the rules. And then she says, okay, we're going to enforce the rules. And then to show, while she's testifying, the radical pro-Hamas people are ignoring the rules. A few of them get arrested, but they're still out there in violation of the rule. And I suppose she doesn't understand deterrence, because when you let it get out of control, we've gone now and just it's radicalizing at warp speed. You saw at Yale, they burned the American flag, tore it down, and they're all prancing around like they're in Tehran.
Right.
And then you see that they're saying that they're pro-Hamas. They tell people we're pro-Hamas. And they're openly insulting Jews, and they're it's out of control now.
Yeah.
And I don't think the universities understand it. I think they feel that, well, we all went to Harvard, Yale, Princeton, Oxford, Stanford, and we teach there. We're the cream of the crop, and we're all. No, it doesn't work that way. I'm sorry. You're only as good as yesterday. And for 3 years, you have banned the SAT, and you've gone to repertory admissions, and your student body would not qualify for the standards that you, not me, not you, Jack, established as essential to do work at Harvard or Yale.
Right.
And you have allowed these students to get away with murder, and you have created an embryo of anti-Semitism, and it is destroying the reputation of not just your university, but the entire concept of elite education. And we're getting to the point very quickly that an employer, if he sees a bachelor's degree from Harvard, Yale, Princeton, Stanford, they're not going to want to hire them, because they'll think, you know what? I don't want this tech guy coming into my Google office and threatening me or taking it over or going to HR. And I don't want it to get in any of that. I'd rather just deal with a guy from University of Utah.
Right.
Because I know they're going to be better educated, and I know they're not going to give me problems. That's where we're headed very quickly. Yeah. I know so many close friends that when it went out that you were so-called white and you were going to be 20% of the student body, that was all that were going to be taken at Stanford, or 40%, they don't even apply anymore. These are not conservative friends. These are liberal friends. They do not want their children at these places. They don't feel they're prestigious anymore. They feel they wouldn't get in anyway, and they're looking at state colleges and campuses. Hopefully, and it's kind of ironic, but it seems to me that a lot of left-wing parents are sending their kids to red state universities.
Yeah. Well, Victor, one last thought for your comment. Around November and December, we conservatives were taking some solace in reaction to the three college presidents and the lunacies going on campus, when some of the larger donors to these colleges, like Bill Ackman, pulling money, and then also engaging in stuff like, you know, like finding plagiarism or funding anti-plagiarism projects, etc. So there was some solace in that. But I think we're beyond the point that that kind of reaction matters. We shouldn't be funding these places, but if a bunch of billionaires come out and say, all right, I'm not giving it Columbia anymore because of all the lunacy that's happened this week, okay, good, but much more stronger measures are called for than that. I don't think we conservatives can take sole solace in that anymore. Any thoughts?
You could, yeah, I wrote a tweet about you could stop it tomorrow, as I said. All you'd have to do, but you do have to win the House and the Senate, and you've got to have a presidency. That's why I was so upset about this House mess. The first thing you do, if Trump were to win, I think they're going to win the Senate. I'm not sure about the House. I used to think the other way, they're going to win the House, but not the Senate. But they've got great Senate candidates, especially that Sheehy guy is really good. They're going after him like crazy, but I think he can beat Tester. And I think we can win the Nevada seat. And I think we're going to take the House. But if you were to get that type of power, all you'd have to do is call in those presidents and say, it's not a matter of if we're going to tax your endowment, it's how. Because you are hiring hundreds of millions of dollars of DEI that is completely worthless, and we're subsidizing it by giving tax-free endowment income. We're not going to do it anymore. So the only question we're going to adjudicate is, do we give you the first billion in your endowment income free? I mean, the first income from a billion, so that places like Hillsdale or St. Thomas Aquinas are not punished, or Pepperdine. But we're going to do it. And the second thing we're going to do is we're going to attach conditions on our federal money to your university. And the conditions are going to be very careful. Do you honor the First Amendment on your campus? When somebody is accused of a crime on campus, do you offer them the Bill of Rights protection? Fourth, Fifth, Sixth Amendment. Do you or not? If you don't, you're not going to get the money. And then all we have to do, number three, is, you know what? We're getting out of the student loan business. It's not even a loan. It's just a give the money to students. A third of them never pay it back. And then it becomes a Democratic talking point election time to cancel the loan. So we don't have the money. We're $35 trillion in debt. And we don't have the wherewithal to cancel $2 trillion. So no student loans. But you, Stanford, you, Harvard, you've got $35 billion, Harvard, $60 billion. You've got a lot of money. All you have to do is predicate your student loans on your endowment. You finance your students. And therefore, if they don't graduate, they won't pay your money back. So you will try to speed up the process. If they're endowed with hard Marxist philosophy and they feel that loans shouldn't be paid back, that's what you teach them. That's basically what the head of NPR said about looting. You don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And same thing with squatters. They've had people very high up that said that squatting is not too bad. It's going to come out of your hide because you're going to finance your own loan obligations. And I think that would shape it up quick. And then we have to say, you know what? Donald Trump put a travel ban, but we're going to put a student visa ban for a while. So we're not going to issue any student visa from Syria, from Iraq, from Iran, and we're not just going after Muslim countries, from North Korea, from Turkey, from Gaza, from the West Bank, and may or may not, from Somalia, from Sudan, any of these countries that is their students have been habitual lawbreakers and anti-Semites. And we'll just do it for a year and see how it works out. Just see what happens. And that will apply to faculty too. Any faculty member that has been openly anti-Semitic, it's not that we're going after free speech, we just don't have to extend your green card if you're not a U.S. citizen. I'm not talking about the rights of citizens. I'm talking about visitors here.
Right.
And I think that would stop it very quickly.
Yeah. Amen. I like the Hansen plan. Everything.
it's very easy to do.
Yeah.
But you know what? The immigration is not a suicide pact. There's nothing in the Constitution that says you have to allow 2 million illegal aliens or 500,000 foreign students in every year. There's a new essay, I think it's in the Wall Street Journal today, about the full extent of Chinese cheating in the United States. Yeah. It ranges from stealing hybrid corn seeds
right.
to sophisticated military technology, and it's a lot of it is people here on work visas and student visas. And I don't know, but I doubt there's 350,000 American students or business people in China.
In China, right? Not at all. All right, my friend, you've been terrific as usual. Thanks for all the wisdom you shared. We thank our listeners for doing that, listening. And some people can rate this show, those who listen at iTunes, Apple, and you can rate 0 to 5 stars. Practically everyone gives Victor 5 stars. Some people leave comments. I'm going to read 2 comments, Victor. One is from The Blade of Perseus, your website. Again, that's victorhanson.com. And the other is from iTunes. Blade of Perseus. This is from Mary. Mary says, I appreciate your thoughts and comments, but thoroughly enjoyed discussion involving your family and California in those days. I could just see your grandpa sitting on that chair on the porch. Need more of that so that younger folks can understand the depth of loss experienced from those days to today. Thank you. And that's lovely, Mary.
That's very nice. The reason I don't do it more is I get very sad. Yeah. I get depressed because I'm living in this house, and I go into one room and I see it's 1965 and my grandfather is giving me a lecture that you always pay your bill in person. And he liked to mail a check, but he thinks it's better just to go see the person and hand him the check.
Yeah.
And then he's telling me, I don't want to ever see you with a cigarette in your mouth. And I don't ever see you with alcohol. And I don't want to ever see you bring shame to the Davis family. That kind of, I mean, and not in a moralistic, you better. It was a conversation, you know. And yeah. He was telling me, it's, anyway, I can't get into it. I get really upset.
All right. No tears. No Eeyore here now. No Eeyore. All right. One more comment. This is from KY23. It's titled Get Smarter. VDH does the heavy lifting. You don't have to waste any time by listening to anything that doesn't matter. Never have heard anyone this prepared to discuss anything. I'm jealous in a good way. Thank you, KY23. Thank you, Mary. Thanks, everyone, for listening. I want to thank the folks that sign up for Civil Thoughts, the free weekly email newsletter I write for the Center for Civil Society at AMPHIL. Go to civilthoughts.com. Sign up. You're going to like it. Victor, you've been terrific. Thanks, everyone. We will be back soon with another episode of the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Much appreciated.